You're listening to Stateside. I'm April Baer. Could 2020 be a more critical or challenging time to start up a bilingual nonprofit news source for Michigan? And could Spanish-speaking communities have a greater need? As everyone's coping with the pandemic, the risk of coronavirus in the workplace, a lack of health care, and civil rights issues, there is a serious lack of good breaking news information in Spanish. My guests today are some of the founders of Candor Media, Jose Jimenez and Elizabeth Rogers Triard. Jose, Elizabeth, welcome to Stateside.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us.
Elizabeth, will you tell us the origin story of Candor Media?
I can tell you my part of the origin story. I was at a wedding with our other co-founder, Michelle Jokish Polo, and she talked to me about wanting to have starting a news site for the last year or so. And I said, I've been thinking the exact same thing while we were standing in the appetizer line, and it went from there. You should ask Jose, though, about the beginning, because he and Michelle had already started talking before Michelle and I did.
Right. Jose, some people might know Michelle's name from her role in public radio, actually. Could you tell us how you two started having this conversation?
I knew Michelle just from her reporting. I myself, I'm originally from LA, and I actually wanted to do this since I've moved here. In LA, I read this article from the LA Times about the undocumented family in Flint and how they were, a lot of them were unaware of the lead in their water. And they were finding out from family in LA, they were calling them and say, hey, you have lead in your water. Did you know that? Like, wait, how do you know? Like, well, it's all over the news here.
Because unlike in Los Angeles, there are not a proliferation of Spanish language media services in Michigan, right?
Correct. Actually, I think there's still no open air television stations in Spanish in Michigan. There's no Univision, there's no Telemundo, there's nothing really. I mean, I know technology has grown a lot, so a lot of people have more access to the internet, but there's still no open free news source that undocumented or Spanish-speaking folks have here in Michigan.
So how did this go from just being somebody really should do this to we are the ones who really should do this?
Once Michelle and I started talking about this idea, she was sharing her passion about, movement journalism, about really, giving the community a voice. She introduced me to Liz, and then we just started meeting at coffee shops. We all wanted the same thing. We wanted to provide something to community here and give them a voice.
Yeah. Jose, in your perception, is this just a matter of critical mass? There have actually been a number of journalism startups. I'm thinking of Bridge Magazine, Bridge Detroit. There are podcasts like Daily Detroit that have taken on sort of hyper-regional news in various parts of Michigan. What's going on here that wasn't really being addressed?
I think just from my experience in the brief time, the 3 years I've been here in Michigan, I really saw a lack of representation in local news here in West Michigan. I felt like the community, especially when just in specific to like when our work with Cosecha, when we're doing marches, there was always this narrative of how the police kept the march safe, and there wasn't enough emphasis on stories of the community, like why we're even marching, why are we in the streets, why are we making so much noise? And so I really wanted to, use my experience as a filmmaker and a storyteller to, to tell those stories.
You're also a bilingual news outlet. Why was that important?
That was one of the main reasons I wanted to start this, was just to provide another Spanish outlet. I think today there's not enough. I know here locally in West Michigan, there are a few Spanish-speaking news, and they're very important, but I think they don't really provide an in-depth coverage of local news. They provide a lot of news about, a lot of our communities' home countries in Mexico or in Central America. But, there's really lacking this in-depth conversation about local news in Spanish here in Michigan.
One of the things that's really interesting to me about this, that as a bilingual news service, it feels like this is something that might speak to people who, again, just do not get some pretty basic stories covered in the language in which they are most fluent. But also there's a voice available there for maybe whose parents came from another country and who maybe grew up speaking a lot of English themselves, may not feel totally comfortable with their Spanish, but who still feel very much, you know, a part of Latinx culture, and like this is who they are. This is how they identify. Is it ever difficult representing both of those readers' kinds of needs in the same service?
I mean, yes. I mean, I think you just summarized my life. You know, I'm a Mexican American. You know, it's always been a struggle. At least for me personally, you're always trying to satisfy two cultures. The scene from the movie Selena always comes to mind. You know, like we have to like Oprah and we have to like Christina. We're working harder than a lot of other people just to satisfy, you know, our parents, satisfy our country. It's always a lot of extra work. And I think that's okay. And I'm up for the challenge of, you know, being able to give a message in English. And also, like, I've always worked in Spanish television, so I know that it's not about translating message, it's more about transcreating and making sure the same spirit of the message is comes through in both languages.
So, Elizabeth, what are some of the stories that Candor has covered that you could maybe tell us about that have a little bit of a different feel than they would if they were covered in other media?
The main thing, as Jose mentioned, is we're very community-focused and people-focused. As you know, there's tons of news happening right now with the protests and political upheaval in our country. And we're looking to cover what the community is talking about from their point of view. So we have covered the protests, but we've covered the protests by interviewing people. Why are you here? What are you doing? Versus like, hey, this just happened. Or there was two protests. Well, there were multiple protests at the same time the first Saturday that a lot of this was happening. And there was a protest and a rally of about 300 or 400 people at the Calder Plaza that normally would have had coverage, would have had police, would have had news coverage, and nobody was there because everybody else was over at the police station. But this was a local family who had pictures of their son and grandson who had been allegedly beat up by the Grand Rapids police, who were talking about their most recent case and their needs, the Phillips family. And so that's a big deal, and it wouldn't have been covered otherwise, this local issue in the midst of this larger national conversation, if we hadn't been there. Michelle has done opinion pieces with Brandy Arnold, a local person here, about her reaction to the Saturday protests that were different than a lot of people's about what happened downtown. She put up yesterday a story about a woman living in a prison here in Michigan and what it's like to be in prison in a life sentence during COVID and just how hard that is. And those are stories that are important that aren't often covered.
Jose, can you talk a little bit about how fresh the conversation is between this intersection of the rights of immigrants, the rights of Latinx people, and Black Lives Matter?
I mean, I can do my best. I think as a Latino, I see that if the Black Lives Matter movement succeeds, our community succeeds. You know, we think our fate is tied. Both our communities have seen extra attention by the police. Both our communities have been attacked by police. I mean, let's call it what it is. And I think I'm really happy to see just the unity between our two communities now. A big hashtag going around is "Tu lucha es mi lucha," which means that your fight is our fight. And I just really admire the unity that the Latino community is showing with the Black community right now. That really shows that our fight is their fight.
Can I also add that for many in our community, these communities are both of their communities. We have several people in our community who are Afro-Latinx, and so they have to fight injustice as a Black person and as a Latinx person. Sometimes we talk about folks as two separate communities, but there is a lot of people who inhabit both of those identities for whom this is even harder. And we want to make sure that we cover that story as well.
Are there issues within the pandemic that you feel like you've been able to bring some different angles to?
I think that we're definitely working on those stories. I really want to tell stories of just here locally. There's been a fund called La Lucha Fund, which has really come about trying to help our undocumented community members because, you know, they're considered essential, but yet they don't receive any federal funding or any federal help. And so this fund, I really want to do a story on them and just how they've been able to just come together and help the undocumented community here in West Michigan.
Sorry to interrupt, but when we talk about who's working in essential industries, I guess that means a lot of our agricultural industries, chicken ranches, hotel and hospitality, back of the house workers in restaurants. I mean, these are people who don't traditionally have access to traditional health care.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and the one example I always give out, like, you know, Grand Rapids is often known as like Beer City. And beers, you need hops to make beer. But you can't drink a beer without knowing that an immigrant touched, those hops to make that beer. I feel like we really take for granted the work that a lot of our agricultural workers and undocumented workers do for us every day. It's unfair to be considered essential, but also considered illegal at the same time.
If you're just joining us today, my guests are Jose Jimenez and Elizabeth Rogers Duillard. They are on the leadership team for Candor Media, a new bilingual news startup. I wanted to ask you about a project that you have in development that's a documentary film about Lance Corporal Gilmar Ramos Gomez. Can you explain a little bit about who he is and why he was an interesting subject for you?
You know, this documentary really is personal to me because I myself have had history with, having my citizenship in question. But well, to tell you a story about Gilmar Ramos Gomez shortly, you know, he's a Lance Corporal in the Marines. He was arrested for trespassing at a Spectrum hospital. And
he was nearly deported after this arrest, wasn't he?
He was. Actually, a police captain with the Grand Rapids Police Department. When he was off duty, saw Hilmer's mugshot on TV, on the local news, and decided to call his ICE contact and email him, asking him to verify his status. Meanwhile, GRPD has already arrested him and found in his possession his passport, his Michigan Real ID, which only citizens can get, and his military dog tags in his possession. Fast forward Friday, ICE interviews him at the Kent County Sheriff's Department, and they issue deportation orders. There's still a lot of questions to the story. The ACLU of Michigan has sued ICE to reveal the interview that they conducted with the Marine, because there's no way that this man should be considered for deportation. He is a citizen. He had his passport on him. The 14th Amendment grants us citizenship to all who are born here, but Latinos always have to prove themselves more. And even when we have the proof, sometimes that doesn't even matter. We're still at risk of being deported. We know that this is not the first time that a citizen has been deported. And we want to really share that this story is just part of the national picture of the immigration problem of America and how it criminalizes people of color, immigrants of color. And we really want to give this story a national context and not just this regional story.
You know, there was a time when getting a journalism project off the ground meant trying to make it to some kind of print edition. I just don't know if that's something that people think seriously about anymore. What are your ambitions for Candor? I mean, would you like to see it become some sort of print publication, or do you think online is the way to go?
Liz and I always joke about this, but like I've had like this vision of a kind of transforming local news. If we analyze the story of Gilmar Ramos Gomez with the local news, the reporter in that story that the captain from GRPD saw, you know, there wasn't a single mention of him being a Marine. You know, the way it was reported was this man got on the helicopter pad and, what were his intentions? You know, there was this whole narrative of scaring the public and how the police kept it safe. But the reporter did not mention that he had PTSD. The reporter didn't mention that he was a Marine. You know, those little facts there matter. And when it comes, and it is our responsibility as journalists to give all those facts. And I kind of envision hopefully Candor Media growing and becoming like a different source of local news across the country, not just here in Michigan.
You know, Jose, you mentioned that a fair amount of your grounding in this comes from your interest in movement journalism. We're in the place in the country right now where people do tend to seek out digital news, and they tend to seek out digital news from sources that they feel an affiliation with. There's no question that there's a need for more Spanish language media within Michigan. But I do wonder, as Americans tend to view media more generally with a skeptical eye, is a news service that takes advocacy as part of its founding mission. Is that something that you think is going to be a durable model over time?
If not just durable, I think it's essential, especially with lack of representation. If we're not doing it, like, who's going to speak for the community? I think back of, like, you know, advocacy newspapers, maybe, I don't even know if they want to call them so, but, like, in East LA in the 70s during the Chicano movement, the newspaper called La Raza, you know, it was very much there to help lift the voices of the community there and fill the void of, you know, traditional media not getting our side of the story. You know, a lot of times traditional media is white and male, and they are often the ones that gets to ask the question. So it's really important for us to be at the table to ask those questions that our community is asking. You know, I think traditional media often is too buddy-buddy with power. And I think as journalists, our responsibility is to always question those in power.
I would like to add that it's considered advocacy journalism often because it's different than traditional journalism. But we have to remember that traditional journalism has historically been very white and very male. So reporting what the community says, reporting what the community wants, might be seen as advocacy, but it's also just straight news because we're just telling people what the community is saying. The other thing is we're approaching this from a point of view that certain things do exist, and the role of journalism is to find the truth and not get sucked into the both sides-ism that has become so prevalent in journalism today. So we assume that racism exists. We assume that the large body of work that exists in America about the disparities over racism in the criminal justice system, it's been documented over and over and over and over. We assume that that's true. And so we report from that place of truth, and we report knowing that those power imbalances are in place. It's not going to a protest and quoting the anti-racist activist and then quoting the neo-Nazi counter-protester as if the neo-Nazi has anything important to say. Since hopefully as a culture, we've decided that is bad. And obviously we haven't, because we're still fighting that fight. But from our newsroom's point of view, racism is wrong. Racism exists. White supremacy is a huge problem in America. And so we're going to report from that truth and from what the community is dealing with in that truth. So that is, I think, considered by a lot of people advocacy. But I think as long as we're chasing the truth will speak for itself.
We've been talking today with Jose Jimenez and Elizabeth Rogers-Triard. They are part of the editorial team for Candor Media, a brand new nonprofit news source for Michigan. Guys, thanks for talking with us about this, and good luck with the venture.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for having us.